SCP-8480, Anuxophobia, Maladaptive Autocannibalism. Anuxophobia is the intense fear of nails, which can include both finger and toenails. Those with the phobia will often bite their nails to keep them very short, out of fear of losing them or them catching on to something. I think then, based on the title of this article, you may have an idea of where this is going, and whether or not you want to continue. The article does bear a content warning related to graphic depiction of blood or mutilation, and a couple of other things that might get me demonetized for mentioning them, so I'll just leave it at that. With that glowing notice out of the way, let's take a look. We begin with an interview log between Dr. Aliana Weiss, a psychiatrist, and Emily Curtis, designated 8480-A. Security footage shows the interior of an interrogation room that has been staged to look like a therapist's office, with Dr. Weiss sitting behind a desk and Emily sitting cross-legged, looking down at the floor. Her right hand is bandaged, showing partial blood staining, the concentration of which is centered on the tip of her index finger. Weiss asks if she's been holding up well and if she's making any friends, before saying that she's here to be her friend. Emily can't believe that she thought that would work on her, and Weiss blushes, apologizing and saying that she's been talking to 8-year-olds all morning. Emily just asks when she can go home, and Weiss replies when she's had a bit of a chance to breathe. She has some questions for her, causing Emily to roll her eyes and look out the window, saying that of course she does. She stares at her bloody finger, wrapped in gauze, before biting her lip and tearing at the skin. Shivering, she drops her hand by her side and tells her to just ask what she really cares about. Weiss asks in turn what she thinks she cares about, and Emily lays back on the couch and stares at the ceiling, stating that she wants to ask why she snapped. It's not like the other times, though. Weiss tells her to just start with what happened, and Emily says that she was at school for an exam, and she was feeling anxious, as she wasn't ready. Weiss asks her to tell her more about the test, and Emily hesitates, starting to chew the nail on her thumb. She says that she had to pass this exam, as she's not a bad student, she just gets overwhelmed and ends up missing classes. This exam was her only hope, and they were all in there, desks in perfect lines, perfect students ready to ace the exam, and then there was her. She realizes she's been biting her nails and violently throws her hand down, hitting her thigh and causing her to wince. She says that her head was throbbing and she couldn't focus, although Weiss says that a small headache shouldn't have been an issue. Emily, however, says that she's been having migraines ever since she started college, and they've only gotten worse and worse. She can almost feel the headaches in her entire body, so when she looked at the exam and her head started to swim, she panicked. She had to pass, though, so she started writing. Weiss asks how the incident occurred then, causing Emily to remark that she's worse than her last therapist. She doesn't know why they wouldn't let her finish writing. She begins biting her left thumbnail again and says that whenever she can't think, she bites her nails to help her focus. She starts to hear people around her muttering, but between the exam and her headache, it was just noise. She gets to the end and her brain shuts down, screaming in pain, yelling at her that she doesn't know what she's doing. She's pushing through, biting the skin around her nails. The controlled pain helps, and she doesn't even pay much attention while she chews. She has to finish this essay, or her parents would kill her. That's when people started talking around her, but she didn't look up, as she couldn't waste any more time. Then a girl behind her screams at the top of her lungs, but she kept writing. Then the proctors came over and started yammering, as if it wasn't already hard enough to keep her thoughts straight. So she told them to just let her finish writing this sentence and then she could talk, but they demanded it. Then one of them touched her on the shoulder, so she spun and pushed him away, and she thinks she yelled at him too, but she can't remember. She remembers blood, a few flecks across the top of her exam, which she tried to wipe away. She then tasted it in her mouth, dripping down her lips, and saw more blood dripping down her arm. Then she heard the screaming, all of them screaming for their lives. Her head was throbbing, the room was spinning, and she couldn't concentrate on the sentence, so she turned to see the proctor, standing there covered in her blood and staring at her in terror. There was a crack of pain that pulled her out of her spiral, and that's when she saw her finger. She didn't even feel it, as she was just biting her nails, but she had bitten off the tip of her finger, through the bone. She tried to finish her exam, but then the blood kept dripping onto her page, and when she was trying to clean it up and save her exam, the paramedics showed up. They dragged her out, and now she's here. We're then given the SCP document for SCP-8480, with the Keter Containment Class. 8480 refers to an anomalous mental disorder that typically manifests in children between the ages of 3 to 14. Infected subjects exhibit the following symptoms: moderate to severe anxiety, headaches or migraines, moderate to severe nail biting, moderate to severe skin chewing, accelerated cellular regeneration and healing, and significantly high pain thresholds, especially in their fingers. 8480 is believed to be triggered when any child experiences extreme, persistent anxiety or undergoes a traumatic event. While under said mental duress, if the child bites their nails as a coping mechanism, they will be infected with 8480. They will then experience varied rates of symptomatic progression, typically linked to internal and external stressors. Many unidentified instances are believed to survive into adulthood asymptomatically. The majority of instances under the Foundation's care were committed under the age of 15, with there being hundreds of contained instances between all facilities. Emily was significantly older than all other instances when first recovered at age 20. It's theorized that additional research interviews with her will have a high probability of identifying the root causes and triggers of 8480, and will help better understand how to mitigate the symptoms of the anomaly. We're given another interview between Emily and Dr. Weiss. The two sit in silence until Emily asks if she'll just say something or if she can go. Weiss tells her that they can talk about anything she wants, or they can sit in silence for the hour. Emily eventually groans and says that they can talk about this, gesturing at her bandaged hands. Weiss asks if she remembers the first time she bit her nails, and Emily says that she remembers the shame, the embarrassment, the pain, the countless adults telling her what an awful habit it was, the disgusting taste of the sprays that she ignored. Her mind won't let her forget any of that. Weiss notes that it sounds like it was present throughout her life, and asks if she can recall a time that it felt the worst. She does remember when she was around 7 or 8, in her bedroom playing by herself, when she heard a loud slam, like something had just crashed into the side of the house. She ran out of her room to see what was happening, but she doesn't remember what she saw. She remembers blood, her mom, her dad, not much else. She ran back into her room, slammed the door and locked it behind her. She saw her mom do that all the time. And then they started yelling at each other. She remembers crying, and when her dad yelled through her wall to shut up and she heard a lamp shatter, she started to hyperventilate. She starts to chew on her knuckle and says that she was alone, trying to figure out why she was feeling bad, let alone why her dad yelled at her. She shouldn't have left her room. It was her fault. Her head felt like it was filling up with oil, coating everything and just making it feel hopeless. Her stomach was in knots, and again he yelled at her. It's noted that her lip is now bloodied, but she doesn't notice, and continues biting on her knuckle. It has also begun to bleed, and bone is partially visible, although Dr. Weiss does not intervene. She heard her mother scream, trying to stop him, but he didn't listen, and she heard the heavy footsteps, the familiar sounds of her nightmares. She heard him try the door handle, shaking the frame, demanding that she unlock it. He was threatening to break it, knock it down, show her how to shut up and listen to her father, saying that she was lucky he didn't take her door away. At first, she didn't know what to do, so she started to freak out. She thinks it was a panic attack, thinking back to it, so her mind is screaming that she's a failure, her dad is pounding on the door, and she knows she's going to get in trouble. She then bit her tongue, on accident, and it helped. As the pain throbbed on her tongue, she felt the pain in her head go down, and it turns out that biting her nails, ripping at the edges of her fingers, it all helped. She used the piercing intensity of the hurt to focus, centering herself around her pain, calming herself through the overwhelming feelings. She stopped crying after that, and learned what a mistake it was to be herself. That was the first time she remembers using pain to stop her mind, her anxiety, her everything. She starts crying in silence, with tears pouring down, before pinching her bandaged finger, causing her to flinch and regain control of her breathing. Dr. Weiss asks if she's okay or if she needs to take a break, but Emily just says that she doesn't know. We're then provided a breakdown of the symptomatic progression, with movement between stages believed to be linked to experiencing additional traumatic or stressful experiences. The first stage can be contracted at any point before an individual's adolescence, with identified subjects having a median age of 9. While it's believed to be possible to be infected as early as 3 months, diagnosis is difficult due to the fact that infants lack teeth. Instead, common indicators are sucking on fingers or otherwise gumming their limbs. Regardless of age, upon infection, all infected instances begin to exhibit various symptoms within 2 to 3 days of the inciting incident. They will begin to experience low to moderate anxiety during the majority of their days, unless already at those levels. They will begin to feel the anxiety manifesting as light pains in their stomach or head, commonly diagnosed as a tummy ache or headache. They will develop numerous maladaptive coping mechanisms, ranging from picking at skin, pulling their hair, and biting their fingernails. Subjects have stated that, of these, biting their nails provides the most relief. They will also begin to believe that there is something inherently wrong with them that is unable to be fixed. It's unknown if this is a symptom or a side effect. While there are exceptions, Stage 1 instances will move into Stage 2 within approximately 6 months to 1 year from initial onset. We're given a conversation between Dr. Weiss and Mikey, aged 7, who was recovered recently from a private daycare in Southern California, displaying symptoms typical of a Stage 1 infection. Weiss asks him if he had fun in the group room earlier, as his hand is in his mouth and a slightly pink drool drips down. Mikey says that they played with Legos and he got to build a house, but then Stumpy knocked it down. Weiss tells him that that's not a very nice thing to call somebody, but Mikey insists that his name is Stumpy, as that's what all the other kids say, and they call him Stubbs, but his name is Mikey. Weiss says that the other kids only say that because they're scared, like he is. Mikey takes his hand out of his mouth, showing that he has bitten his nail far enough that his skin is bleeding underneath, and he begins to draw on the floor with his fingertip. He states that he wants his mommy, as his mommy didn't call him a scaredy cat. Weiss explains that he can't see his mother anymore, as she isn't safe. They just want to help him, and she changes subjects, asking him about what he's drawing. Mikey begins to bite his other fingers, but nods. Instances in Stage 2 of infection will continue to experience the same symptoms as Stage 1, but will also become dependent on their maladaptive coping mechanisms to regulate their emotions. Attempts to dissuade this behavior through medical, psychological, or therapeutic intervention have no impact. They will also begin to further increase their reliance on nail and skin biting as the only consistent methods of regulating their emotional states. This often leads to them bleeding as a result. They are believed to be able to remain in this stage for an indefinite period, with Emily being the oldest discovered instance, having transitioned into the third stage just prior to intake. For an infected individual to move into stage 3, they must experience a significant and prolonged period of stress, anxiety, and traumatic experiences. The exact trigger changes on an individual basis, and there is no way to predict what will trigger stage 3. We're given another conversation between Weiss and Lana, age 12, who was admitted to the Foundation 2 years ago, following a report by their middle school teacher after she began bleeding in class during Bring Your Parent to School Day. She is sitting on her bed in her containment chamber, curled into a fetal position and rocking back and forth. As Weiss enters, she is quietly whispering a prayer to God for him to fix her so she can go home to her mom and dad, and she promises she'll be good again. As Weiss introduces herself and approaches, Lana freezes and yells for her to stop and to not come any closer, as she can't stop herself. She begs her to leave her alone, and begins to clutch her head and groan. Weiss says that she knows the pain hurts, and that other people like her bite their nails, but Lana covers her mouth and begins to hyperventilate. She exclaims that she can't do that. Her dad says that biting is dirty, and that she's going to make God sad. She asks why God won't stop crying, and she asked Mrs. Sally in Sunday school, who told her that angels are always watching. Lana thinks that the angels don't like her, and they tell her that she's a bad girl. Her dad told her that when she bites her nails, she shows the world how wrong and rotten she is. She wants to stop bleeding and wants to be a good girl, but the devil won't let her. He wants her to bleed. He tells her to be bad and tells her that she's a monster. She then rips a deep gouge into the skin of her palm, causing blood to pour out and her bone to snap through. She begins to cry, apologizing to God, and Weiss steps away to call for a medical team. We then have another interview between Weiss and Emily, with Weiss remarking that Emily caused quite a stir in group today, starting a feeding frenzy. She knows that she's been working through her traumas, but she can't bite her fingers in front of the kids. Emily begins to argue, but Weiss cuts her off, telling her that she is the oldest one here, and all the other kids look up to her, whether she likes it or not. Emily argues that she's not suddenly the magic miracle cure that everybody else needed, and if she can just save her, then she can look like a big hero who saved a girl from biting her nails. They're going to have to force her to stop, as she needs the relief. She then grabs her head in pain, with blood freely flowing out of her mouth. She bites on her right thumb, as a crunch can be heard on the recording. She sighs and apologizes, and Weiss asks if she knows what a maladaptive coping mechanism is. When anybody feels bad or stressed, we all want that feeling to stop, and whatever you do that helps relieve that pressure is a coping mechanism. Biting is what they call a maladaptive coping mechanism. She was put into a very hard situation, underwent extreme trauma, and without a model of how to cope, she developed her own methods, which are temporary. Emily says that she just doesn't get it, as it's everywhere. Every second, every moment, every breath, every step, everything that she does in her entire life, she is always in pain, always terrified. She feels her skin crawling back up her bones, like it's taunting her to rip it off again. She says that everybody has every finger bandaged, because they can't bear to look at them. They can't live in a world where their nails will always grow back. She tightens her hands into fists, reopening wounds, and blood begins to seep through the gauze. She says that they feel like monsters, not because they eat their own fingers, not because they have them locked up in boxes, not even because some of the people they let work here say it to their faces. They feel like monsters because their body is wrong. They are wrong, and they're just trying to correct that. She's just so tired of feeling like this every day. Weiss offers a tissue to her, but she refuses, wiping her tears with bloodied hands. Weiss says that the worst thing about maladaptive coping mechanisms is that they work. They do give relief, and that's valid, but she's clearly very emotional just talking about this. She asks if she really wants to spend the rest of her life like this, but Emily asks if she even has a choice. Stage 3 of the infection means that the individuals are unable to be helped beyond mitigation of symptoms and involuntary reduction of self-inflicted injuries. All previous symptoms are heightened, ranging from moderate to severe levels, with the addition of some more anomalous effects. The skin and muscles in their fingers and hands will soften, becoming easier to rend, and when an instance bites their finger, nail beds, or hand, the anomaly will create nerve blockers and trigger the production of endorphins. This results in the reduction of pain, as said endorphins create a momentary sensation of pleasure. Their teeth will also harden, allowing them to bite through not only flesh, but bone as well, and will begin to exhibit enhanced cellular regeneration, causing an accelerated regeneration of tissue. They will progress to compulsively consuming all flesh and fingernails surrounding the bones of their fingers, which, due to their enhanced healing rates, will result in the subject continually requiring that they consume their own flesh to avoid extreme emotional distress. They will universally express the fear that they are broken and that they do not view themselves as human. This extends to losing a desire to eat anything other than their own body, be active, or engage in any activities. While research is underway to determine how the anomaly can be cured or neutralized, there is currently no cure for 8480. They will continue to experience these symptoms until total biological death. We're provided a conversation between Weiss and Jordan, age 15, who has been in Foundation containment for 8 years, being one of the most advanced cases in containment. He is in a therapy room, restrained with leather straps, and Weiss asks if he's ready to try again. Jordan says that if she lets him move his arms again, then maybe, but Weiss says that they both know they can't do that. Jordan insists that he's changed, and he's better. He's not a monster anymore, and he just wants to go home. He won't tell anyone about her or this place, and he'll just go home and play games with his friends. Weiss tells him that he knows that it's not safe for him to leave, as he's a danger to himself, and going home will just make it worse. Jordan replies that they're hurting him, and does she really think that him sitting here telling her all about how his mom and dad made him feel unloved, and that's why he hates himself, will make him better? Weiss tries to tell him that he has to want to be helped, but he says that he doesn't. He's fine, and he knows that he's not a monster. It's just that nothing helps but biting. It doesn't hurt. He just begs her to let him bite, and he promises to stop after one finger. He just needs to feel it rip, to stop it from coming back. Weiss says that she wants to talk about why biting helps him feel better, as she felt like they were really getting somewhere last session. Jordan laughs and says that he doesn't remember anything, as he was in so much pain, and he just said stuff so that she would let him go back to his room where he can help himself with what actually works for him. Weiss tells him that she's not going to help him hurt himself, as she wants him to get better, but he replies that they both know that it's too late. We're then provided an incident log that took place about a week after Emily's last therapeutic session. In the lead up to this, she had declined further treatment and refused to leave her room, rejecting all food, and was seen chewing her nails at a significantly reduced rate. She is seen standing in her room, staring at herself in a mirror. Her clothes are dirty, stained with blood, and her hair hangs in a messy nest behind her. The lights are all off, and she's silent, panting, rhythmically chewing her knuckle with the bone visible. The bone scratches against her teeth, a constant grinding noise present throughout the video. Her eyes are also bloodshot, and she states that she feels like an idiot, as talking to yourself is what crazy people do. She tears a chunk of her nail off and spits it out, saying that Weiss said it could be good to talk to herself, maybe having a bit of growth or acceptance. She snorts and asks when has talking ever fixed anything, and when was the last time something other than biting worked. She then says that she can't change this, and doesn't want to, as she bites on her palm and rips the skin up her thumb. She knows that it's wrong, that she could be healthier, and maybe even start working on being better, but it's easier to just keep biting. It's safe. It's familiar. It's always worked. It makes her feel better. She then sneers and says that so did her bedroom and the house, and even her dad used to feel safe. She then grabs her right wrist with her left hand and says that dad didn't know. He didn't mean it. She manages to pull her right hand away from her mouth, sinews stretching and snapping as she does. She says that she doesn't know that, as she can't know what goes on in the minds of monsters. She attempts to bite her nails through her hand wraps and says, stop, as she doesn't have to listen. She tries to hit her hand away, but it doesn't work, and she says that she does have to listen, because she's a coward and too scared to quit. She states that she bites because it makes her feel better, and then says that she bites because it's easy. It's a cop-out, and she knows it. She asks if she thinks she likes this, likes hurting every day, feeling like her skin is screaming to be ripped off, begging for the relief of death. Does anybody enjoy what she puts herself through, just to be able to focus for a single minute? They don't eat anything but themselves because they don't want to. They're always full. She begins to cry, her tears mixing with the blood on her face, and says that if she doesn't like it, just stop. She continues chewing on her knuckle and says that she can't stop, but then she slows down and ceases her chewing, dropping her hand to her side. She says that nothing she does will stop it, as she stares at her dark red bandages on her hand. She asks how she can be sure, before staring at the mirror in silence for the next minute. She says that maybe she can't know, and she smiles and says, exactly. Her smile fades, and she says that it doesn't change the fact that she's a monster. She raises her hand and begins to chew on the frayed edges of the gauze, stating that they are not a monster. They are not broken. She asks if she's joking, as she is a monster, and has known this since she was young. They're both a monster, and they can't keep denying it. She asks if she's not tired of being a monster, and maybe they're not. Maybe it's just somebody else's hateful words, other people's insults, a voice in their head that was forced on them, driven in when they hurt them. She grabs at her chest and bunches her gown in a fist, stating that she feels it in her soul that she's a monster. She then shakes her head and asks, what if that is a lie? Would she really deny them a chance to grow, to heal, to start moving on? Can she really deny the fact that they are human, not a monster? She begins to say that she's not denying anything, but then she sneers and says that she denies it every time she takes a bite, every time she swallows an ounce of flesh. Each nail, each bone shard, each bite that frees them is denial. She is just playing the monster. She throws her hands to her sides, her skin in a state of mid-healing, and she asks, what is she supposed to do? She shrugs and just asks, what if they didn't bite their fingers? She rolls her eyes and says, sure, like it wouldn't drive her insane with pain, but then says to just shut up and listen for a second. Weiss is right, that she is stronger than she thinks, the things she's been through. She has spent years running from this, hiding in every blood drop, delving deeper and deeper into the twisted knots of flesh that grow back, chasing after a dream of normalcy, The people around her, the doctors here, cast her as the monster. To them, she will always be a monster, as who else would cause that much suffering just to stop a little headache? She snorts and asks what she suggests they do, and then says that they move on. They start to heal. It's not like they're fixed, but if they own this, if they make it part of them, slowly but surely, they can start getting better. It's not going to change overnight, but this isn't working. They're more than just blood, flesh, bone, pain. They are Emily. It has always been a part of them. The monster inside, the victim, the thing that they have feared for years. They have always been afraid of them, but they survive in spite of them. They try. There is no one way to be normal. Normal is a myth. There is no monster. There never was. She looks down and sees the pool of blood she's standing in, shivering. She says that they will always see a monster, and then says, let them. Who cares if they never change their minds? She knows the truth. She is no more monstrous than they are. Immediately following this incident, she sat in silence on her bed, staring at her hands. They began to visibly swell, especially on each finger, and she appeared to be smiling as they did. 1 hour later, she began to rip at her hand dressings, removing them and throwing the torn gauze on the floor. The subject's hands appeared red and raw, and a black, chitinous growth had erupted through the skin, terminating in a sharp, jagged point. She expressed glee in reaction, flexing her newly grown anomalous appendages. Moments later, the feed from her cell was lost as she utilized her anomalous mutations to escape containment, injuring 3 Foundation security members in the process. She is still missing and considered a threat to safety and normalcy, with her neutralization considered high priority. Following this, the file was revised to include updated containment procedures and a new stage of the progression of infection. An instance is believed to enter stage 4 following a period of extended self-reflection, involving the acceptance of the instance's past traumas that caused the initial onset. This only occurs when the subject ceases constant consumption of their fingernails and surrounding tissues. In stage 4, the subject will exhibit the following symptoms. They will cease to feel any pain, although it's unknown if this is physiological or psychological. They will experience decreased anxiety levels, reduced to minor or negligible. It's unknown whether this is anomalous or not. While they do not experience compulsive nail or skin biting, they still exhibit alternative, maladaptive coping mechanisms, alongside other signs of psychological distress. They will develop black, chitinous growths in place of their fingernails, each one capable of shearing through metal, stone, and organic material, alongside increased strength, endurance, and a heightened metabolism. They will also display significantly heightened hostility towards Foundation staff, and refuse containment. Due to the difficulty in containing instances that reach Stage 4, and the potential threat they pose to normalcy, containment procedures have been revised. The updated containment procedures state that all infected individuals are to be isolated and contained, under the guise of prolonged psychiatric care. Bandages, gauze, splints, and casts are only to be issued to instances on request. Any potential infected individual is to be placed in a simulated traumatic experience after identification, unbeknownst to them or their guardians. If symptoms progress following the traumatic incident, the instance is taken into Foundation custody. Under no circumstances are any Foundation staff to provide counseling, support, or mental health treatment for infected individuals. They are no longer prevented from maladaptive auto-cannibalism, as their self-inflicted consumption appears to prevent progression to stage 4. As a result, infected only require food and water once monthly, and are to remain in solitary confinement at all other times, in perpetuity. SCP-8480-A, Emily, is to be neutralized on site, with her remains returned to Site-80-P for further research. I think this one will resonate with different people for different reasons, touching on psychiatric care, trauma, and coping mechanisms, while also just being really gross. The Foundation does not come off too stellar here, proving that not only could they not really help these people at all, they've now decided to just stuff them aside and let them consume themselves endlessly as long as they don't bother anyone else. I think there's a fair amount of subtext here that I'm not really qualified to comment on, so I'll just leave that to your own thoughts. It feels, in some way, like a really horrific way of introducing X-Men to the SCP universe, with mutations triggered by traumatic events. But I think in this case, I'd rather not get any powers.